America behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Everybody, welcome to Car Stuff. And Ben, I got something I want to tell you.
Lay it on me, Scott. You know, you're one of my favorite people to talk to.
You know, this is just a little bit of an update because we usually do this in nuts and bolts.
Yes.
But I had a little experience with the project car recently. I thought I'd mention real quickly here because I thought it was kind of funny and scary in a way.
It's been a long time since you talked about that.
A little while, yeah. I mean, I finally got up the guts to take it out of the garage 2 weekends ago. It was really nice, and I couldn't resist anymore.
Yeah.
Wires hanging from the dash still, but I decided that it was a good time to drive it in the neighborhood, even though I know the brakes are bad and, you know, all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I conned my 9-year-old daughter into getting in the car with me, and she's terrified of the car, by the way, because it's just a big raw sounding V8 engine, right? It's real scary sounding to her. She puts her hands over her ears, that type of thing, when I start it up. Mm-hmm. So I love it. She doesn't like it all that much. Big scary car. So she gets in and we drive about 50 feet and the car dies.
Oh man.
Flooded right there in my, I'm in a courtyard. So it dies right outside the house and she's panicked, wants to get out, wants to run back to the house. And I said, listen, just stay with me for 3 minutes. It'll work. And it did. You know, 3 minutes, it, you know, cleaned itself out and it ran fine. So we get back to the garage and, you know, it had developed some kind of noise over the short drive we were on. So I thought, well, I'll check that out. And I hope it's not an engine noise, but I got it in the garage, have the hood up, and she's outside in the driveway and I'm kind of messing around on the hood, not doing much of anything, but just kind of poking around. I accidentally hit the spring that holds the throttle, on the carburetor, right? You know, the throttle control.
Yeah.
Pulled it off and the car went to instant full throttle in the garage.
Oh.
Of course, I'm in park.
Okay.
But it goes, now it's a 4-barrel 440 engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the garage and it's got very little in as far as exhaust, rather muffling. It's very, very loud, right?
Yeah.
So I hit this spring and it knocks it right off the mount by accident. Instant full throttle, just like
that. Must sound like a dragon.
I'll tell you what it sounds like. It sounds like the world is coming to an end, Ben. It was super loud, and I scrambled. I almost knocked myself out trying to get into the car and just shut the engine off.
Yeah.
But the key for the ignition is hanging by the wires down on the floor of the thing. So I'm scrambling to get that. It must have been full throttle for a good 7 or 8 seconds.
Oh, no.
In the garage. Kids terrified. I'm shaking because I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought for a second I was going to be able to get the spring back in place.
Right.
And then I thought, no, I'm going to bail. And I dove through the window to get to it.
Wow.
It was scary.
Window diving.
Yeah. 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 It was scary.
Man.
Yeah. I've never heard anything like that in my life. Well, and of course I got my head under the hood at the time
when it goes full throttle, I'm leaning over
the engine when this happens. So it just terrified me too.
Bet your ears are ringing.
It was really something. So that's all I've got, but I thought it was kind of a shocking moment there.
Mm-hmm. And guys, everybody should stay tuned, because we do get updates about the project car.
Occasionally.
When
I get to it.
As needed.
Yeah.
As needed. A little bonus.
Anything like that happens, I'll let you know. But not that anybody else is interested.
Oh, okay, are you kidding? You guys should write in to us about your project cars, too.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Because this is something very, very close to us. We're big supporters of do-it-yourselfers.
Mm-hmm, definitely. That's a great idea. Photos, too, would be appreciated.
And now for something completely different.
Completely different. We took it in a direction you wouldn't have expected there. But all right. This, I guess, comes from a listener.
Yes.
This is a listener suggestion, today's topic, finally. This comes from Jacob, and Jacob is from Parker, Colorado, and I think we mentioned this also in Nuts and Bolts.
Mm-hmm.
Says he's been listening to our podcast for about a year and thought it'd be cool if we'd make an episode about locomotives, diesel electric locomotives in particular, because he heard that somewhere modern day locomotives get upwards of 300 miles per gallon.
Mm.
I don't know about that.
I'm
not so sure. I'm not convinced. I couldn't find anything about that.
I'm a little skeptical.
And he thought it'd be cool if they implemented diesel electric technology into cars. You know, and mentions 100 miles per gallon. Well, we actually had a listener. We read that one. And
yeah.
I said, you know, BMW's doing that already.
Right, yeah.
They had a prototype. But someone wrote back in, Mark from Colorado wrote in and said that VW has some versions of their Polo and Golf vehicles that have diesel, biodiesel hybrid, electric hybrid technology already on the road in Europe. And, of course, you know, that leads to the X1 or XL1 concept, which
we talk about in an earlier podcast.
Yes, exactly. That's the 1 liter car that we're very excited about seeing here in the States.
Oh, so, man, I hope it makes it.
Diesel locomotives. That's what we're talking about here.
Yes.
Diesel hybrid electric.
And I want to point out that both of our listeners who wrote in from that for this podcast are from Colorado. What's going on down there, man?
You know, I didn't even notice that. One's from Parker, one's from just Colorado.
Conspiracy. No, I'm kidding. So. I'm kidding. We're sure that you guys are not in some sort of strange conspiracy. So here's the here's the first question. The first question for diesel locomotives, right? Why use a diesel engine in the first place?
Why use a diesel?
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, Ben. I don't know.
No. You know this one. Diesel engines are more efficient than gas engines.
Okay. Makes sense.
At the basis, you know. So that's why you start with the diesel engine.
Yeah.
And the next question is, why a hybrid vehicle?
Ah, now I got the answer to this one.
Yeah.
Okay. This is where, and see, I didn't know a whole lot about trains until we started looking into this, really.
Mm-hmm.
Other than we talked about Amtrak in the past, we've that's about it.
We've touched on rail and high speed stuff.
But, about the locomotives themselves, the actual engines that power, you know, these big long trains.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty fascinating. So you say there's a diesel engine in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then it is electric, really. These trains are, to some point, to some extent, electric.
Right. So we've got like a big 12-cylinder, two-stroke diesel.
Two-stroke diesel. Now that's interesting, right? Okay. So two-stroke diesel. Well, actually, you know what? Two-stroke diesel, it's not all that unusual, but, the crazy thing is that it does power this electric motor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, it sounds like a big engine, right?
Yes.
Okay, 12-cylinder engine. How big do you think? Do you know the horsepower on this thing? Our example in our article, I should say.
The example in the article we use has 3,200
horsepower. 3,200
horsepower.
That's incredible to me.
3,200, just so it sounds longer.
3,200. It's the weight of this, the whole locomotive is around 270,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, the power that that engine produces is equivalent to about 4,700 amps of electrical current. So
yes,
that's incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
110 mile per hour top speed.
Mm-hmm.
What does it have? What else it has? It's four drive motors. So there's four electric motors that these things are powering.
Mm-hmm.
64,000 pounds of thrust.
And that's the first engine system.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? that's really to power the train, to power the train's motion, right?
Yeah, that's just the mover.
The mover, that's right.
Yeah.
And what's the other? Well, you said there's another one?
Right. Yeah, there's a V12 engine also with a generator, and that makes electric power for the train so that the people in the passenger cars or whomever are able to operate lights.
Yeah, makes sense.
And use electricity.
Makes sense. So one's strictly for power. Mm-hmm. One is for amenities, I guess.
Yeah.
If you can call it amenities, I suppose.
If you can. I mean, I guess it depends on what they're hauling, on the situation.
Everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's again, this is the example version. But mm-hmm. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why hybrid? Why did they go from, if you got this big powerful engine.
Yes.
Why did they go to hybrid power? Why is there a need to go from, you know, this diesel powered 12-cylinder engine that's clearly strong?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they need to convert that to electricity in order to make it go?
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to say it traces back to the idea of a transmission.
Ah, very good.
Right? And we know about transmissions. The average car, your daily driver, needs to have a transmission because of the way a gas engine works. So engines have kind of a narrow revolutions per minute range where it's kind of the sweet spot where horsepower and torque are at their best.
Power band.
Power band, mm-hmm. Yes. And we've got some examples in the article that go a little bit more in depth than this, but basically the transmission in your car lets the gear ratio between the engine and the drive wheels change as the car's speed or acceleration goes up or down.
Exactly.
And the reason we don't want this on, okay, so you shift gears, right, so that your engine can still stay below the red line
mm-hmm.
and near the power band, or preferably in the power band, right? And so the engine on a car where it could let you go, for example, 100 miles per hour, like with a range of 500 to 6,000 revolutions per minute, as you say in the article.
Eventually, when you shift up to that point.
Sure. Yeah. As you build up to it. Exactly.
Yeah.
The engine on a locomotive has a smaller speed range. You know, we're talking like idling at just under 270 revolutions per minute and then only building up to like 904.
So this is a massive engine that is really, I mean, in all sense of the word, it's barely working. Really.
It's going slow.
It's going slow, and that's so that it has long life.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't want to, you know, grenade itself at a certain point when it gets up to too high revs, because these massive engines, they can't run at high revs like that.
Sure, yeah.
Carrying a lot of power, carrying a lot of weight. You've been in a car before that's struggling to pull something, right? I mean, a boat or a trailer or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the same type of thing that you've got going on with the train, sort of, in a way. Now, I don't know, I may have misspoken there, because it's different in that doesn't necessarily happen with a train, because you look at the length of a train, the weight of the train, how the heck does that even though it sounds impressive, this 12-cylinder engine, you know, 3,200 horsepower, look at that train that's about a mile long. Look at the weight of each one of those cars filled with cargo. Mm-hmm. Sometimes 10 or 12 cars in each car. I mean, vehicles that are on the road in each car.
Yeah.
Mile long. How in the heck does that one locomotive pull that load?
It can't do it alone. A diesel engine can't do
it alone. Well, not really, no. So that's why this thing, you know, that's why this hybrid technology works out, because you mentioned there's no transmission necessary.
No,
right?
Because the gearbox for that would have to be just ginormous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you couldn't do that. You're not going to have somebody shifting this train as it drives, you know, as it powers up and powers down. So there's no gears necessary. That's the beauty of having these electric motors. And as you know, we've talked about electric motors in the past, how they help with braking and regenerative, you know, technology.
Mm-hmm.
All of this helps the thing, and of course torque. Torque is massive in electric motors, and the thing is, it far exceeds what you'd find in a vehicle that's standard by or powered by
gas engine and transmission.
Exactly, yep. I was trying to say that uses a standard powertrain.
Yeah,
because by the time it gets to the wheels, you know, you've lost a lot of energy, you lost a lot of torque, you lost a lot of horsepower. The thing is that, you know, these are all of it available. Instantly, you get all of that power available instantly at the wheels.
At any speed,
that's right, and that's key. Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe the biggest advantage that a train has over, you know, another vehicle. So let's say that you had a truck that had, a 3,200 horsepower engine.
Okay.
And it was a big 12-cylinder engine.
Sure.
Even if it had electric motors, like we're talking about, a truck would not be able to pull the weight that a train does.
Ah, yes. And why is that?
So if you had car after car after car after car lined up behind a truck.
And they were all tied together.
Semi-truck we're talking about. It would not be able to pull the weight that a train does.
And why is that?
Steel wheels.
Ah, yes. Not only does this give me an opportunity to make a reference to one of my favorite old school hip hop songs, Wheels of Steel, but this this is one of the huge points, because when your car is on the interstate, it's around 25% of the engine's power is used just to push those rubber tires down the road.
Exactly, because they're rubber, they're filled with air, there's a lot of friction, a lot of rolling resistance.
Yeah.
And you know, the initial startup of that thing is just enormous too. I mean, if you're trying to get a car rolling from zero, or a truck rolling from zero to whatever speed you're trying to get to, it's enormous output of power that you need to have. Now, keeping it rolling requires less, but still an awful lot.
Right, because of the way, you know, and this is common sense stuff, I think, right? Of course it takes a lot of power, because when you're just driving on roads, depending on the condition of the roads, you're going to be encountering different types of friction and different types of obstacles.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of formulas. If you go online, you could find rolling resistance formulas.
Mm-hmm.
And you could figure out what the rolling resistance of your own vehicle is, as a matter of fact, on certain types of roads at certain speeds, the type of tire you use, the size of tire you use. It all matters. Now, you know you can buy low rolling resistance tires where the rolling friction or resistance is really low, right? Hybrids have those. They're harder tires.
Yeah.
Now, that's still on pavement. That's still got air in them. That's still rubber, of course, because you have to have traction. You have to, you know, be able to move. But The thing with steel wheels is there's just steel wheels on a steel track, and there's very, very little material touching each other. It's very, very low resistance. And very little – well, you know, the tires, they deform. When there's weight on them. You've seen this. I mean, it's elementary. You load a truck, the back end of a truck, and you'll see that the wheels will start to squish down a little bit because the air doesn't hold up the way it did, you know, prior to that when it was an empty bed. You'll see that, you know, well, of course, the suspension squats down a little bit, but also the wheels, you'll see them deform a bit. That's not the case with a steel wheel on a steel track.
Yes, if that ever is the case, something is terribly wrong.
That's right.
And you should leave.
You've way exceeded the weight limit, or it's really, really hot where you are.
Right. yeah, because they have what we're talking about is the contact patch.
Yes, contact patch.
And that's between that's between each wheel and the track, and that point of contact. Right. Scott, you're just holding up a picture here showing a tire tread point of contact.
That's right. Now, I assume you've got something to tell us about the contact. Size of it, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can go ahead and lay it on him if you want.
Sure. I distracted you. I'm sorry about
that.
Go ahead.
It is the size of a dime.
The size of a dime.
Which is one of the reasons that, you know, growing up, if you're a kid, you may have heard, if you grew up like I did around a lot of train tracks, you have probably heard the old myth that you can put, you know, a penny or a piece of pocket change on a rail and that it will actually knock the train off its tracks.
Oh, yeah.
I have never tried that because from a very young age, I've been trying to be a good person.
I have.
You have.
I've placed pennies on train tracks.
You're a villain, dude.
No, not to knock it off. I mean, that's not – no, I never heard that until I was much, much older.
Oh, okay.
I did it simply to flatten out a penny.
And it works.
It truly does work. Yeah. I mean, you can put it on the worn part of the track and you'll see that, you know, you come back later after the train. Of course, you got to be safe about this.
Yeah.
Come back later, much later. When you got to find the penny, you got to dig around for it a little bit because it'll be knocked off the track, of course.
Right.
But it's squished out into something that's unrecognizable.
And we also want to point out that we are not recommending you do this.
No.
It is dangerous.
This is
a bad idea.
This was 35 years ago.
Yeah, times were
long time ago. But here's the thing, Ben.
Yeah.
I've got a sheet of paper, and this is the one I distracted you with. You said that the contact patch of a steel wheel, this is just a typical steel train wheel on a typical steel track, right?
Right, at any given point in time.
A contact patch of a dime. That means that's the point that's in contact with each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did you know that when we talked about Indy cars, a typical contact patch for an Indy car tire, each tire is about the size of this piece of paper that I'm holding up?
No way, that's
it's
scale?
It's the size of the paper.
Wow.
That I'm holding up right now, which is an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. That's the typical Indy car tire contact patch. Now I'm looking at, and this isn't to scale really, these pictures aren't to scale on it, but there's a picture here of a size comparison, and this comes from, so everybody can look at it if they want to. This comes from something called the Brooklyn Historic Railway Association. So if you go to the Brooklyn Historic Railway Association, and there's a couple of charts and graphs on the side that show this, it'll show a size comparison of the contact patch of a truck tire, which would be like a semi-truck trailer.
Sure.
Which is pretty big. I mean, it's a large size photo here. The second one is of a bicycle tire. I don't know why they threw that in there, but they did. And then it shows the a typical 35-inch steel railway wheel, which is just a tiny little speck on the paper, really.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's the size of a dime. Even small in the picture, but really, that's what the main advantage of having steel wheels is: this low rolling resistance, and the way it can pull so much material so easily is because there's very little resistance on these things.
There's very little resistance, but that leads us to another concern, which is traction.
Yeah, traction. Starting, stopping, right?
Yeah, starting and stop. Now your average locomotive, the wheels that we're talking about, they're not just by the grace of good luck perfectly balanced on a track. There are flanges that keep them on the track.
Yes, that's right.
And
so they can turn.
Right. So it's not exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem for them. Traction is not so much a problem, though, when they're turning, but it's exactly like you said, Scott, when they're trying to speed up, trying to slow down, That's, you know, that's where we get the idea of people being tied to train tracks and the train conductor seeing them but not being able to stop.
Terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying.
You need Dudley Do-Right to ride in and save you at that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I've learned anything from cartoons.
I think I've learned everything from cartoons.
Yeah, I've learned most of what I know from cartoons.
That's why. That's that explains so
that's
much.
That's why
about
we're here,
both of us.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Okay, so we do need to talk about the traction there, because the good thing about the contact patch for a NASCAR vehicle or for an Indy racing vehicle is that that contact allows traction.
Sure, it's enormous and it gets really hot. It's like tar.
Yeah,
and they're able to grip the road and hold on tight for, you know, very evasive maneuvers if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case with a train. They don't have to do that. They're on a they're on a track that goes one way.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they just go straight. They start, they stop. That's about all they do.
Yeah.
I mean, of course they turn and everything. We talked about the flanges, but how, you know, that's a curious thing. They've got this contact patch the size of a dime. How does it get a load rolling that is a mile long behind it and weighs so much? I mean, these things are enormous, right?
Yeah.
How does it do it?
How does it do it?
You know?
I would like you to explain it.
This is the craziest thing, because I really had no idea about this until I read into this. And this is one of these facts that came up that mm-hmm. you just would never guess. But there's a device that sprays sand in front of the drive wheels mm-hmm. on a locomotive. Sand onto the track.
Now, everybody, stay with us. This sounds crazy, but we assure you it is true.
It is true. And this is really, really strange, because hey, maybe I should just read this real quick here.
It's a
short bit from our article, but it says, in front of each wheel is a nozzle that uses compressed air to spray sand, which is stored in two tanks on the locomotive. The sand dramatically increases the traction of the drive wheels. So it has this electric traction control system that automatically starts the sand sprayers when the wheels begin to slip or when the engineer needs to make an emergency stop. It can also reduce the power of any traction motor when the wheels are slipping. So, you know, it has this incredible traction control system that works right now. But if you notice, I mean, there's a photo on our website in this article, how diesel locomotives work.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows these sprayers. It's just a simple nozzle that's pointing at the right where the wheel and the track come together. And, again, I had no idea that part was even there.
But it's just so cool.
It really is. Because when you see the old locomotives, the old steam-powered locomotives, and you know, when they start up, you see the wheels slipping an awful lot.
You can
picture it, right? The steam uh-huh. kind of billowing out the side, those huge drive wheels that are just slipping and sliding as the arms kind of churn it. Well, that apparently doesn't really happen much anymore with these. They slip a little bit, but with mm-hmm. modern traction control systems and just careful monitoring, mm-hmm. they're able to control that with these sandblaster-type materials that are machines, I guess, that
sand nozzles.
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that was by far the most surprising thing to me. I think the second surprising thing maybe was the use of the hybrid engine, like how it works and why it works in the train. But by far the most interesting thing that I discovered in this research was definitely the sand nozzles, man.
And the other thing, you know, another thing that one of these dramatic cost-saving ideas or principles behind using a train versus using a road-going vehicle
mm-hmm.
Is one of the charts that you'll find. Again, this is on that website that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the Brooklyn.
Yeah, the Brooklyn site. There in that same area where the contact patch is, you'll find that chart with it. There's this chart that has the starting energy demand of the subsequent cruising energy demand. To maintain a constant speed, this is between a rail vehicle with steel wheels and a pneumatic tire road going vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and the energy demand, which is given in percentage and BTUs per hour. So again, they use BTUs per hour. I don't know what that would really equate to, you know, miles per gallon. We'd have to figure all that out. But
right.
Take a look at that chart, and I'm going to just quickly show you, Ben, here. This is the pneumatic tire. It goes way up to 100, and then cruising speed goes back down to 57.8. And again, that's energy demand in percentage BTUs per hour.
Yeah.
For a rail vehicle, the initial demand is only 10. Then the cruising speed is all the way down at 2.88. So it takes very little mm-hmm. to not only get this thing rolling, but it also takes very little to keep it rolling. Very, very little. I mean, we're talking about, what is that? Almost 3 to 56. You're talking about like 27 times the amount.
Yeah.
Ballpark. 20,
right.
Something like that. It's incredible, the difference.
And while we're on the subject of the power, just for a quick stat here, the fuel tanks, they still need diesel fuel.
Yeah.
These tanks hold 2,200 gallons.
Whoa.
Like these are designed to work with this, easy to keep going, difficult to stop idea. You know, when you have the train started, ideally you want it to go as far as possible without having to stop it.
Yeah, sure. We've heard a long time. I mean, for a long, long time, you always hear that it's the hardest part of driving a train or operating a train is to stop that train, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why intersections are so dangerous.
And that's why you pay the conductors the big bucks.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I don't know. It kind of makes me think, like, well, why don't we put steel wheels on trucks? Just wouldn't work.
Well, for a number of reasons, it wouldn't work. You know, primarily the roads.
No, it just doesn't work out the right way. I mean, if you think there's so many flaws with that idea.
Yeah, you'd have to have a predetermined track. It's really something that only works if you have a predetermined track.
That's right. This is an excellent case for, you know, the efficiency of a train carrying a tremendous amount of goods cross country versus using several trucks to carry the same amount of goods cross country.
Good point, Scott.
So, this is a definite pro in the train column. You can check off one for yes.
Everyone following pros and train calls.
That's right. That's right. This is definitely a win for them because, and it always has been. It's just the steel rails and the steel wheels just work so well together.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just capable of so much more, the towing capability, I guess, than anything that on the road that we could use.
However, we should point out, going back to the original listener question, when they say, why isn't there more diesel hybrid technology in cars? I think you answered that in the very beginning. You said, yes, there is.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's, we don't have the kind of arrangement that you find in a train, is really goes down to the fact that trains do very different things.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like, you know, this diesel electric locomotive idea has been around since the late 20s. Okay.
Yeah. It goes way back.
It goes way, way back. Right. So back to the 1920s. Now, I don't know. Maybe this listener is talking about some of the more modern,
like the evolution train.
Yeah. Because there's a hybrid. I mean, there's stuff that, you know, in around 2007, they were calling it the world's first hybrid train, which entered commercial service. And, you know, it's different. If you take a look at that stuff online, it's different than what we're talking about here today, but I hope we've answered your question. I hope
yes.
we got to the point because, you know, these diesel electrics, like we said, they've been around for at this point 90 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a proven technology and it truly does work.
And it's widely used across the world today. Mentioned, General Motors with the evolution trains. Those are continually being improved. There, people are selling them to countries and rail systems, around the world. And in the United States alone, the, railway infrastructure remains one of the backbones of our entire commercial side of this country.
Mm-hmm.
So trains, I almost want to say trains aren't going anywhere. As a technology,
yeah.
They're improving, but in terms of diesel electric vehicles as locomotive power sources, it's kind of a case of if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. These are pretty refined at this point. I know they're massive and, you know, they're awful big and, you know, I'm sure somebody's working on scaling the things down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then again, they won't be able to carry as much as they do now.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
Sorry for that last comment, Scott. I was kind of rambling.
No, that's all right. You know what? You mentioned, one of your favorite songs was, Steel Wheels. Is that right?
Wheels of Steel. Yeah.
You know what one of my favorite train songs is?
What?
The Wabash Cannonball. You ever heard of it?
Wabash Cannonball. It's been years.
Of course I know the way. Because I remember the little town of Wabash.
Yeah.
That's where I crushed the pennies, as a matter of fact.
No way.
Behind my grandmother's house, there was a train track that the Wabash Cannonball would travel on in Wabash. We'd crush pennies on that track.
When
I was
cool.
Very, very young. But in fact, that was my dad's CB handle when, you know, back when CBs were.
Your dad was doing CB?
In the car, yeah.
Oh, that's
in the
so
car,
awesome.
Yeah. And his Cannonball was his,
that's
and
so
maybe
cool.
Even Wabash Cannonball, I don't remember, but if no one's ever heard of the Wabash Cannonball, it's an old folk song.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way, way back. Jerry Reed, Johnny Cash, you know, singers like that. Mm-hmm. We'll sing it. Boxcar Willie, guys like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a fun song to listen to maybe once, you know, here and there. Kind of like Alice's Restaurant or something like that. You know?
Right.
It's fun to hear now and then, but, you know, you might not want to put it on your regular rotation in your iPod.
Kind of like those Waffle House songs in the jukebox.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They're good while you're there, but you wouldn't necessarily want to hear them all day
long. You don't want the greatest hits.
Yeah, that's right.
So I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Again, to our listeners, thanks so much for writing in and giving us a good suggestion. To our listeners who are checking out the show, thanks for your time. And if you have a suggestion for us, please, we'd love to hear it, whether it's about locomotives, any other vehicle that drives, flies, or floats. That sounded pretty good.
I like that.
Thanks, man. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can check out our blog. We've got a great website you may have heard of, and you can email us directly at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.